This is JCU Conversations, a podcast show from James Cook University, Singapore. Tune in as we ask experts in the industry more about their lives and their approach to success. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's listen to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Dr. K.T. Rumaran, academic head from JCU Singapore Business School. Our guest today is Eleanor Seat, President and Head of Asia X Japan, Nikko Asset Management Asia Limited, a global asset management firm operating in 11 countries and regions around the world. Welcome, Eleanor. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Very good. Could you share a little on your role as Head of X Japan at Nikko Asset Management?
Sure. Maybe a little first on asset management.
Sure.
Quite simply, what we do is we steward, we grow wealth over time for institutions, for individuals, and with the ultimate goal of, you know, providing peace of mind, security, freedom of choice. Sounds a little lofty, but I genuinely believe it. In terms of Nikko Asset Management, set against a scale business, where, you know, frankly, you build a reputation over decades, not number of years. I think we think of ourselves as a $200 billion startup. We have deep roots in Japan, mm-hmm. but we grew very rapidly on the back of some key M&A. For example, in Singapore, we acquired DBS Asset Management from DBS Bank in 2011. So today, across Asia, we have a slightly different face in different markets. We think of ourselves as being global citizen, Asian DNA. We stand for progressive solutions, being innovative, entrepreneurial, collaborative. We think ourselves as being good partners. And so my role there, I lead the region for us. I'm president of the local entity. I'm part of our global executive committee. As region head, obviously, I enable the success of all functions. We're a full service office, meaning front office to support functions. We have a presence Singapore, in Hong Kong, we have joint ventures in China, in Malaysia. And so otherwise, I'm active in industry. I serve as the deputy chairman of the Investment Management Association of Singapore, which is the industry body. I serve on the standards committee for the Institute of Banking and Finance, which looks at accreditation for the industry. I chair the fund management work group. I also am a member of the XCOM for the Singapore Funds Industry Group. I serve as co-chair for the Capabilities and Training Work Group.
Wow, that's a lot of portfolios you're managing apart from, you know, your primary role at Nikko Asset Management. Amazing. So what's a typical day for you like, you know, as part of your job? How does it look like?
I think it's pretty varied. There probably isn't a day that kind of looks the same as the last. I think that's good. There is a pretty much external part of the role that comes to the turf. That's dealing with clients, saying the thank yous, saying the sorries where necessary. There is a local piece, which is industry facing. There are, you know, areas where, as I mentioned before, we contribute towards. There's some regional work where you meet partners, where you meet, you know, prospects, things like that, service providders, existing as well as new, potentially. And then there is, I guess, a more, shall we say, internal part of the role that relates to talking and enabling, you know, sort of strategy, you know, sort of resource allocation, optimizing that. This time of the year, obviously, performance evaluations, compensations, budgeting, all these sexy topics. and then there is obviously, I guess, on the talent side, key pieces like talent planning, succession planning, thinking about, you know, even things like for us now, we're navigating some renovations. Okay. So it's pretty varied. But I think in terms of most exciting, I would say, if you allow me to reframe, most rewarding, I would say it's the ability to be a part of enabling the opportunity to be a part of actually enabling actually some very spectacular careers over the years. I mean, it's just witnessing how people have really grown their careers and flourished.
Now, that kind of leads me to a question related to how do you motivate your staff? I mean, you have 140 staff, and on top of that, you've got this regional scope to manage, and also the people within your company. How do you motivate them?
We have a lot more people than 140 today. I'll start there.
Very good.
I don't think that's, I think it's good sized. Not sure that's entirely large. But I think to the question of keeping everybody motivated, I would say that's probably not my role, at least not singularly mine. I think I've been very blessed with the opportunity to have a really great team. I think we're nothing without our teams. I think the leads that work with me, they drive, they run their teams really hard, they collaborate, they really work together to kind of yield as strong as outcome as we can for the clients we serve. And so when you have, I think a big part of it is actually in the initial sort of hiring process, because when you have good people sort of working together, magic happens, happens repeatedly, if you dare say. So I think on the side note here, I kind of think we often overestimate what we do in the short term and we underestimate what we can do together in the long term.
Nice. So you're heavily involved in the Bloomberg's buy side network, and that's kind of inspiring. I mean, you probably are a role model for many women in the network. Could you share with us some of the stories in the network that you contribute to shaping the future of asset management in Asia?
Thank you for saying that. I think what Bloomberg Women's Buy-Side Network is a network of like-minded professionals within the investment management industry. A few of us kind of felt similarly, and we came together because we felt there was a gap in terms of there being a network for the buy-side industry. I think the catalyst there was actually an ex-classmate of mine that was in a very catalytic role in heading communications for Bloomberg at the time, which is a powerful platform. And so we came together because we felt that this was important. We felt we wanted to not just sit around and talk about D&I issues, although clearly that's important. But we wanted that platform, I guess, for networking, for community, for thought leadership, to raise the next generation of leaders for the financial industry, next generation of women for the buy side. So it was a very initial, kind of very humble launch in Singapore. A couple of us got together. It was, I think, 2018, so not very long ago, 5 years now. We're celebrating our 5th year anniversary this time. And I think it is to address this underrepresentation of women in the industry and try to be a part of addressing that, championing sort of younger next generation of women. And so today we're really stoked that the industry, the network has really, I think, birthed, I want to say, more than 8 chapters.
Wow.
We have a chapter in Australia, went to India, New Zealand, everywhere, Hong Kong, and I think quite more recently, Brazil. So join us on LinkedIn. Look us up, BWBN, Women's Bloomberg Women's Buy-Side Network.
Interesting. I just want to dig in a little bit more because, you as a role model, and you have these women in the industry sort of looking out to you and your colleagues as leaders in the industry. What sort of activities do you do to sort of, you know, enable them or even assist them in the right direction?
I think we do a lot by way of like networking, some mentorship. Mm-hmm. We do a lot around thought leadership, just talking about, you know, pertinent topics of the day for the industry, not just about, I guess, quote unquote, women's issues.
Right.
I think we bring the conversation to the forefront. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot by way of sort of enabling that profile for next generation leaders. I think a lot of that is about having that platform. But I do think, you know, it's all about actually, they're not enough. I don't know that we all think of us as the role model, but not enough role models to begin with, right? I think they're not enough variety in terms of what, you know, quote unquote, you know, success can look like, because it's so varied.
Yes.
And, you know, I think and a lot of them actually rather imperfect and good because it is that way. So I think we're sort of trying to be a part of just fostering more examples of what success can look like. And it's very varied and very imperfect.
Right. True. As you know, our lives are too. So the finance industry is constantly changing. You know, we started off with the Internet of Things, and also before that, technology had already been ever present in which banks operate their systems and processes. And now we have AI, and there are many other trends that are taking place. Would you like to share with us some of these trends? And they are exciting, and how are they contributing to a change in both the ordinary life and also to the industry?
Times, they are changing for sure. I think the industry will see more change in the next 5 than it has collectively seen in the last 20. I think it's terribly uncomfortable, but very exciting at the same time. At, I don't know, plus minus 13% of the economy, finance as an industry is growing, albeit at a slower pace, but still, you know, in sharp contrast to other industries, it's still a big part of the solution. I think innovation gains traction in tumultuous times, and it has been very rough waters in recent years. I think the industry is working hard at all levels to really, I would say, discard traditional operating models. I think there is an urgent need to respond because there have been so many things that are, disrupting the industry, from, you know, sustained uncertainty and volatility, from the increasing complexity of what clients' needs are and demands are for preservation, for yield, for, you know, for sustainability, for impact. I think there has been disruption by way of, as you say, AI, machine learning, and enablement that will probably come from that. I think there has been a lot of change by way of regulation in terms of the requirements, and that's, you know, and that's causing margin pressure for us.
Yes.
You know, there is a lot of need for broad scale cost reduction for the industry, hyper customization for clients, fintech, you know, with all its evolution, seems to be starting to deliver on its promise. So there is so much going on, but yet very, very, I guess, unchanging and quite central. You know, the reality is finance continues to fuel the economy. It continues to shape decisions. It drives that through the right incentivization, right? So many of the world's most complex issues, from inequity to climate change, right? I mean, it will be solved by some combination of public and private capital, and finance has a big role to play in it.
Wow. You're in the middle of action, I would describe, and in a very exciting period of time. Almost every other decade, there is some changes that's happening, or a string of technology that appears to impact the finance industry. I just want to kind of deviate a little bit to something more personal to the question of, did you have somebody who had actually given you an advice as you were, trajectorying in your career? And what was that advice, and how did that advice sort of shape your current way of thinking?
I think I probably is that there's no one source. Mm-hmm. I probably have a little kind of a mixtape. Mm-hmm. I've just dated myself. in terms of advice sharing and things that I've just stitched together over time, mm-hmm. I think maybe one thing by way of sharing is, I've learned you always have time to, sort of extend a little help, mm-hmm. right? Always have that avenue, no matter how busy, no matter how young, mm-hmm. no matter how experienced, right? To be a part of uplifting someone. And, that the answer is usually not within, but in the extending and the giving of help to others. Mm-hmm. I think, where you trust your abilities, you also have the confidence to lift others. And so I've been really blessed by the industry, by the ecosystem here. And mm-hmm. so that's been a big part of my serving in industry as well. We mm-hmm. talked about some of the areas, but others, by way of, participation in mentoring and championing of the Financial Women's Association, in participation of the Singapore Financial Leaders Network, mm-hmm. the Young Business Leaders Network. Mm-hmm. Singapore is fantastic in the way of providing these platforms, shall we say, mm-hmm. for people to come together, right. For that catalyst to happen. So I think we have great opportunities to give back.
Very nice. So what's the, apart from your professional life, what's the biggest challenge you faced in your personal life, and how did you overcome and try to navigate that through? Because, I don't mean to say just because you're a woman, but even men also face similar situations, both from personal and professional. And if you have faced some something similar to a very big challenge in your life, and if you could share with us how you navigated that.
I would say parenting, becoming a parent. Yes. It is the most rewarding, most frustrating, most humbling, most magical experience. I had my children a little later, so mm-hmm. I'm still very much early part mm-hmm. of that journey right now. Mm-hmm. And in this season, I think I'm learning from my children how to adopt this open posture, yes. to embracing everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, they embrace life with such passion and abandon. Mm-hmm. And I would say I am maybe a recovering pessimist in the sense that I think pessimism is lazy. Optimism takes work. It takes careful purpose. And optimism isn't a personality, it's learned often the hard way. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in that, sort of season where I'm learning that actually the way you talk to, most importantly, yourself mm-hmm. about any particular situation, about any particular chapter, actually determines whether you progress or get stuck, right? So, I'm learning that this season from them.
Very nice. Okay. Yeah, I mean, children, we can learn a lot from them as well, especially being patient.
You and me both.
Yeah. As a leader in finance, what advice would you give to young professionals looking to kind of, set their career on path?
I would say don't be so fixated about the starting point, you know, about what, you know, you think the entry point should look like, what the role should look like, whether it should be generalist, whether it should be specialist. You know, I think give yourself time to find your voice, your story. It does take more time than you think. And you need to be kind to yourself in the meantime, right? Growth is hard and there will be a lot of it, right? I would say in the same token, don't be so fixated about the endpoint and the outcome. I think the longer you think you can control the outcome, the more frustrated you will feel. You know, our role is oftentimes not the outcome, but actually the process. And, you know, I always say like 10% is, you know, sort of what you do. 90% is actually how you respond. Right? And experience, frankly, it's not more than resilience, persistence over time. And, you know, a lot of time what appears to be sort of public victory, that comes from, you know, navigating lots of confusion and chaos. And it comes from actually private discipline in the everyday, right? So I would say, you know, stack small successes along the way, stay curious, you know, stay present in the meantime and just do the work. The outcome will come.
Those are excellent advices. And I think our young people can learn and think about it and see how they could navigate their life. And you mentioned quite a number of time about time. And I want to just ask you one last question on, you know, if you were able to go back in time, say 21 years old, what would be the one thing you would like to have done or changed in order to be where you are here today?
Don't know if I can crystallize it to one thing, nor it's about changing, but more, I think I would probably tell myself to be more active about seeking feedback. I think feedback is so powerful. I'm not sure I did that enough. And it's changed, right? In this space, in the past, you know, old managers, they just, you know, tell you off, you know, cut your legs off, you know, that's how you learn, right? But I think it's changed somewhat these days. These days, actually, managers sometimes need that permission, you know, for you to give them, you know, for them to give you feedback and you need to ask. And I wish I spent more time, you know, sort of listening and trying to ask better questions rather than formulating answers. I think the other thing would probably be to tell myself that my current definition of success is too narrow. It is just not broad enough. Like most things, success is not linear. There is a big S curve to it. And that's okay. So a lot of it, I think as most high performers, you're just very anxious for the results, right? And, you know, whatever you think you define for success for you today, frankly, it changes as you grow, right? So it's tough. I mean, I think there's too much emphasis on fruiting, not enough emphasis on rooting. So I would tell myself, that, you know, just be careful about the definition of success. And in the meantime, one of the biggest, you know, private successes I've had is actually I've had the opportunity to really have made lifelong friends along the way. And that's so precious to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Eleanor. I see that, you know, one of the takeaways is that how we should, you know, perceive success in a broader context rather than in a defined trajectory. I guess you're also alluding to if you define, you will stumble if you don't see that line of success, and unless and you have intervening forces that you have to navigate through in order to achieve, you know, that undefined success, but yet a success in the end. And I like the phrase that you had used about being rooted rather than, you know, just being on the surface movement. in life. So these are some of the interesting and very insightful takeaways I think our young people and listeners would take. This has been really a wonderful discussion and listening to your experience in the financial sector and some of the trends that you have shared. So thank you for joining us. So some of our audience may want to know how to connect with you. Would you like to share with us how we can do that?
Well, thank you for having me. I would say probably LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to find me. It's probably easiest to hit me up there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.